Yeah, we'll be in touch.
Podcast in a car.
Yeah, it's a podcast in the car. Let's just turn the... Oh, my God. It's Dave O'Neill here on The Debrief, and I'm with Fiona Loughlin.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. It seems like we're just in the car, but don't be fooled. We've just done a gig together. We've done a... It was called A Carer's Night Out.
I know.
And it was for people that care for their mainly autistic kids, I think, and people with dementia. And Fiona, you smashed it. You were fantastic.
Thanks, Dave.
And like myself, were you editing on the run?
Oh, my God. Because when you mentioned autistic kids before, I went on. I was just... You don't realise how many don't mention the war moments there are going to be.
Oh, in your stand-up. Yeah. Exactly. I know.
Because I started going down a road with the nursing, and that leads to pronouncing a woman dead that wasn't dead. And then I thought, even that's probably...
That's a bit borderline.
Yeah, so I kind of just pulled the parachute on that and left them.
Yes. I didn't finish one of my routines. Like, the punchline is disabled toilet. And I thought, they've all probably got... A lot of them have kids with disabilities, so they wouldn't appreciate someone...
But you don't realise how many landmines up ahead... When you start a routine, because I can go through, you know, I go through a lot of routines to get to a routine sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I go out of it, in and out of routines, and but I thought you chose your material very well, and they loved you.
Oh.
Because it was actually a real wide variety of people. There was like a 22-year-old up until 80-year-olds there, I reckon.
Yeah, there was some... I was like, are you the... Who's looking after you?
Yeah,
well, you're the carer.
Well, that's the thing. I've done carers before, and sometimes they bring the person that they're caring for, and you're like, yeah, who's the carer? I can't work out who's the carer here.
Mm.
But obviously, it was just like a great night out for them, and they loved it.
Well, I got here. That's...
Yeah, you came from another gig.
Mm. But remember, you and I...
Oh, God. So I was doing a gig in Geelong.
Yeah.
And... For people not from Melbourne, that's an hour from Melbourne, you know.
And I was doing the gig too.
You were going to get the train to Geelong.
Yep.
It was for primary school parents.
Yep.
And the gig was going great. And I'm on
the train. I'm nearly there.
Yeah.
I was
then
texting you.
Yep. And then I
got off the train. I got into a taxi.
Yep.
And I said to the taxi driver, I need to go to South Geelong because doing a show at St. Mary's, was it St. Mary's?
St. Mary's Footy Club, yes.
Yeah, in South Geelong. And he said, that's impossible. So what do you mean it's impossible? He says, we're in Bendigo. And I just fucking freeze. And my daughter said to me, talking about carers, I need to... So what happened to your end, anyway?
Well, I was on stage and Tom Seger, the MC...
Oh, Jesus.
...hands me a water bottle. And, oh, that's very nice.
Oh, no.
And it gives me, and it's got a note and it says, Fiona's not going to make it, do as long as you can.
Oh, no. I felt sick to my stomach. I couldn't... I just didn't know what to do.
Well, so did no one check your ticket on the... train?
No, somewhere in my mind, on my way from my house to the train station, I replaced Bendigo. I replaced it on with Bendigo.
Oh, okay, right. So we were trying to work out how, because someone said, well, I think they check your tickets,
I happily went to Bendigo thinking that was where I was going.
Yeah, I get it.
Keep in mind I'm retarded.
And also, you're not from Victoria.
No. And I've been to Bendigo a few times on the train, and I don't know why, but I was as confident as I could be that for some reason, yeah, I just thought it was Bendigo. And then Vin or Tom was texting me and saying, you're far away, and I'm like, the penny still didn't drop, because by then I'm in Geelong. I'm like, yeah, I'm in Geelong.
It's like something you do if you're overseas, like, you know, you're meant to go to Munich, but you go to Berlin, because you're not from there.
Like, it's just hell on legs.
But, you know, at our end, they didn't even seem to matter. They sort of went, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds like Fiona. She's in Bendigo.
Oh, well, then last week I had a gig in Castlemaine.
Oh, yeah.
And my daughter had just started kind of doing, putting together regional shows. And she had Kirsty Webbeck and Kel Belknapes. And she said to me, just for a favour, for her first night, she said, mum, would you mind headlining? And she's still paying me, and I thought, yeah, I'd do that. For a reduced fee.
For your daughter.
Why wouldn't you do it? So she said, can you just make sure you get on the right train?
Yeah, right.
I said, absolutely, Tess, I can do that. I won't be making that mistake.
There is a train to Castlemaine, yeah.
Yes, so I'm on the train to Castlemaine, and I'm pedantic about, you know, making sure I don't get, you know, miss the Castlemaine stop. So then we pull into Castlemaine, I get up, I'm standing at the door of the train, and I'm waiting for the door to open.
Oh.
And next thing, the train takes off.
Oh, no.
And I'm like...
You and trains is not a good idea.
I'm just screaming. I started... Because I just go into panic mode, and I started screaming, and I pressed the emergency button.
Oh, my God.
In the train. I'm just like... I always just presume someone's going to help me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, ah! And this guy's like, you're Fiona Lockwood. And I said, yes, of course. I was supposed to be doing a gig in Castlemaine. And the train just... the door didn't open. He said, with that button there, you're supposed to press that.
Oh.
And, you know, Dave, I must have never been in a train before and been the first person at the door.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the doors have always just opened.
Just open for you.
And so,
you're like a rich person. You're like Prince Charles. He doesn't dress himself.
And I don't carry any cash on me.
Yeah, you're like...
Not because I don't have any.
Remember that great
remember
that great footage of George Bush when he saw a scanner at a supermarket? He's just staring at it because he'd never been... He hadn't been in a supermarket for 30 or 40 years. He couldn't believe it. He's just staring at it. That's like you on a train.
Well, this poor bugger that was on the train...
And so then...
He goes... I said, well, what am I going to show? Like, it's his problem. I said, what would I do? He said, well, you have to get off at the next stop.
What's the next stop?
He said, Bendigo.
Bendigo.
And I'm like, no fucking way. I'm not going to Bendigo again. So 2 weeks in a row, I ended up in Bendigo.
Oh, my God. And then did someone come pick you up?
No, I had 2 minutes to catch the next train back.
Back?
So I get on that train, but my phone's dead by now. My daughter is freaking out because no one can find me. And also, Dave, with my history, I don't have room to move with these things.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to make the gigs. You've got to make the gigs, yeah.
People will... that's what I was so upset about the first time.
Yeah,
rang Mark, my
your manager,
and I just went, you know what they'll think, Mark? And he said, yep. And he said, and you're going to have to, you know, that's...
Yeah,
there's nothing you can do about that for a while. Anyway, so when I finally got to Castlemaine, I got there for the gig in time, but not when I said that. Yeah.
Where was it in Castlemaine? I know Castlemaine. My mother-in-law lives in Castlemaine.
It was in a little...
pub or something? Or
no,
a cafe?
No, it's kind of a little groovy craft beer
place. Oh, okay. In a warehouse?
Yeah.
Yes. My mother-in-law told me she nearly drove off the road when you told your chemist uniform story on the radio the other day, so which you told tonight, which is quite a great story. And have you... So, coming back from...
Oh, that's right. And Kel Bell knows when I go there, he goes, why don't you just fucking marry Bendigo?
Yeah, you love Bendigo. So you love Bendigo.
All roads lead to Bendigo.
Bendigo, no! It's like your rosebud. No! Bendigo, I love Bendigo. Well, have you found... So, for people that don't know, you're in a coma. You're out now, obviously.
You're out of the coma.
You're back gigging. And how... Yeah, like you were saying, how have you found getting gigs again?
Yeah, it's been great. It was a really nice entry back in, was gigs from Your Good Self and Tom Seger, and, you know, doing these kind of... And who's the other guy, the redhead guy married to a doctor?
Redhead guy married to a doctor. Ralph Melf from Happy Days. Anyway,
kind of gigs out.
Evan Hocking.
Yeah, Evan Hocking. So I got these kind of gigs happening.
Yeah, you do. You've been doing quite a few sort of footy clubs and school benefits.
School benefits,
which are for parents, groups of parents.
When I turn up, when I don't go to Bendigo.
So. Well, you're a great comic. You've got a profile.
Thanks, Dave.
And also, you're a female, and they're often... I know because I get primary schools asking me, can you run a comic? Can you get a... We need a female comic. And so... And Fiona Lachlan, yep.
Yeah, being a female comic has got as many pluses, if not more, than disadvantages. There's fewer of us. Plenty of gigs to go around.
Do you reckon... I've got a lot of theories. I think starting out as a female comic is harder, just because of the... You're on the open mic scene, and there's a lot of... idiots. A lot of dickheads.
Yeah, and there's a lot of...
sleazebags.
Oh, you mean...
like, males.
Oh, being hit on and stuff.
Yeah, when you start out.
No one
hit on you?
No one hit on me.
I remember the first time... I always do this on this podcast, but the first time I met you was at the Star and Garter, which used to be a great venue run by Jamone and Bob Franklin.
Yeah, it was so good.
In South Melbourne, and Brad Oakes, friend of ours, comes up and he goes, we've got to put this girl on. She's called the bus down from Alice Springs. I'm like, well, okay, fair enough. She's called the bus down. We're only humans. Let her on. Yeah, don't say no to the girl who caught the bus down.
3 days on the bus.
Oh, my God. And that's where I first saw you. And you did okay. Do you remember that gig? Those gigs?
Yeah, I didn't really know. Because prior to that, all I'd done was MC, not comedy.
Community events and stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And which is often the way in a small town.
Yeah, and someone said, it was the arts minister at the time, and he said he was in the audience of one of these, we used to call them cabarets back then, and, you know, there'd be local artists, jugglers, poets, hippies up in Alice. But I loved it all, and I used to be the MC. And, of course, when you're MCing, you say some
funny gags. Will you tell stories then, or?
No.
Just more gags.
Yeah, and this guy said, you're doing stand-up. And he said, you should apply to my office for an arts grant.
Oh, yeah.
And go to Melbourne and check out stand-up, live stand-up. Because I've never seen a live stand-up.
Yeah. No, that's right.
And I didn't know what to ask for. So I applied for...
A bus ticket?
$600.
Oh, really?
Which got me a return bus fare, McCafferty's bus. 3 days on a bus. And actually, my first gag... was about buses.
What was your first gag? I said
that I came on a bus, and I said, because back then bus travel was more...
Very common. We used to get the bus to Sydney from Melbourne.
We didn't have budget airlines
then.
And I remember saying, people on buses are about 40% uglier than people on planes.
Good joke.
A bus is a moving capsule of losers. And all the winners are flying right over the top of us.
That's a good joke.
So that was about the only joke I had.
Yeah.
So, and I had this letter from the arts from the arts department up there, and I had to get it signed. I remember getting Brad Oakes to sign that. This was to make sure that I didn't squander the $600.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. I didn't know that. Get a grant to get the bus down.
Yes.
What year was that, you reckon? What year was that? Let me guess, 95?
I was 27. Sure.
Well, that was 2 years ago.
27, God, yeah. It was so long ago. It was nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, no, more than 20 years ago.
More.
You said 30 years ago.
You said you were 53.
Fuck. Yeah. Anyway, I was rubbish, and I tried...
No, but I can remember you not being that... You had charm, and people liked you.
I might have had a bit of something
going
on.
I'm pretty sure...
But certainly no material.
Brad introduces, she caught a bus from Alice Springs. Everyone immediately goes, well, that's impressive, she caught a bus.
And I remember one leg at that Star and Garter that night. One leg just shook uncontrollably. I was like, what the fuck is my leg doing?
That can happen. I mean, when you start out, you're so nervous, too.
But I kept trying. You know, I'd save up. We used to get the child endowment back then.
Yeah.
Which was a stipend.
I remember my mum would get that, yeah.
A stipend by the government.
Yeah, my mum would get it. It was always a good day. Was that a monthly or...?
Yes, monthly.
Yeah, monthly, yeah.
And it was basically to buy shoes for your kids. Yeah. Or extras, you know. And all women got it, no matter how rich their husbands were.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Because husbands can be arseholes.
Oh, I keep the money.
So I used to save up the child endowment, and every time I had enough for another bus trip to Melbourne, I'd go down to the backpackers and pick a nanny.
In Alice Springs.
Yeah. Right. Get some young German or, you know, quickly, audition a nanny, interview a nanny, and then I'd go on a bus again.
Oh, wow. How many bus trips did you do?
About 4 or 5.
Wow.
Maybe even 6, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And then I... kind of gave it away because it was
too hard
and wasn't till years later, because I was a bottle blonde back then.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
And
you had short bob hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I It all got too hard, and I kind of pretended I wanted not to want it.
Oh, okay.
And then one night I was watching the Comedy Festival gala.
Yeah.
And I just got this was about 10 years later, I was 36. Oh, a stab if I could have.
Yeah.
Oh, it hurt like hell.
Yeah.
And so then the next day, I cried a lot that night. I was just like watching all these comedians. And I'm like,
well, it's terrible when you know. Yeah, you could possibly do that.
Well, I'd never found out if I couldn't, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I got up the next day and I snookered myself. And that's the way I always operate.
Another bus ticket?
No, now I'm going to catch a bus.
Another bus booking.
I'm going to catch a bus to LA. No, I rang the local theatre, because we've got a beautiful 500.
Yeah, what's it called? The Allure?
Araloa.
That's right, yeah.
I rang them up and I booked.
Oh, God.
I booked myself in for a one-woman show. This is when I had no material. And I said, I'm doing a one-woman show in 3 months from now. And so I booked it and paid for it. And then I thought, well, now you're buggered. You have to do it.
Wow, that's a deadline. A deadline.
Yeah, a deadline, which people like, we need.
Yeah, it's true.
So I did that show and now ended up bringing Emily in on it.
Your sister?
Yeah, and we called it Fiona, a Sister and Some Guy.
Oh, right, and then you took that to the Melbourne Festival.
We took it to the Adelaide Fringe.
That's right.
In 2000.
Yep.
And Michelle Buxton just happened to, because the venue we had was the Stables, which was directly behind the Stag Hotel.
Yeah.
Dangly opposite the gardens. And I knew nothing about festivals or fringes. I'd never been to Melbourne Festival. But we booked this little stable. I had to borrow $8,000 from my husband
to
put the whole thing on.
Well, he makes dentures for a living.
He makes dentures. He produced it. Like, he was happy to produce it. And we were the highest independent earning act that festival.
Wow.
Which was pretty good. So we certainly got our $8,000 back and some more. And then, Michelle Buxton came and saw it, and she's
like a comedy manager, promoter type.
Yeah. And she came, she only reminded me of this the other night, and she came straight out of the show and she rang Susan Proven.
From the Comedy Festival, Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yes, and she said, I've just seen someone who I think is going to be
huge.
I don't know. All right.
Yeah. That's interesting. And then you did the Melbourne Festival, did you?
The
next year, yeah. You did the Parkside Hotel or whatever you did, hotel.
North Fitzroy. And we won the Best Newcomer.
That's right. Oh.
But what I did, David, was pick up a different instrument.
My mother's.
And that was storytelling.
Storytelling. And that's essentially, like tonight, you tell stories with jokes in them, basically. Mm.
And then you don't have to remember. How the hell do comics who just
do one-liners?
How the fuck do they remember?
They write them down and they sweat over it. Have you ever worked with Carl Chandler? He's the one-liner king. He's always pacing up and down. He's got to remember 100 one-liners.
What's the trick, do you think? You come off the back.
It must be you must connect them somehow.
I can't imagine working that.
But he did a show. I went to his show and he told a great story in his show about missing a plane to Adelaide. I said, why don't you tell stories? But I think one-liner guys have that real purist thing where they're like, I'm just a one-liner guy. I'm just writing jokes. So, but whatever.
How long has the storytelling, the narrative truth-telling been going on?
I think
since... Because that's all I knew how to do.
Yeah. I reckon when I started, there were people doing it. So, since the 60s.
Tell stories?
I tell stories. Yeah, I love stories.
I love your stories about your dad.
Oh, Kev.
Fuck, they make me laugh.
Oh, yeah, Kev. I just went and saw him because we were out in Ringwood doing this gig and they're in Mitcham, the next suburb. So.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, he's there with Mum. Yep.
I love Kev screaming at you kids not to answer the phone.
Oh, don't answer the phone.
From the bus station.
He's still obsessed by the... And what would happen today? The phone would always ring. We'd have dinner every night at 6 p.m. on the dot. 6 p.m. And then the phone would always ring. And he'd go, they're bloody 6 o'clock phone call. Bloody don't answer it. Do not answer it. Bloody family time. And so even now when I ring him up, I try to ring him around 6. Hey, 6 o'clock phone call. He was obsessed by the phone.
He kind of... I was telling someone about this. And I said, Dave O'Neill's dad kind of... kind of sounds like Frank Barone, an Australian Frank Barone.
Who's Frank Barone?
You know, Ray Romano.
Oh, yes.
The guy that plays...
Yeah, Dad.
So he was funny.
Kev was funny.
Funny and grumpy.
Grumpy, yeah, that kind of...
Because that was just kind of his act, or his shtick.
Yeah, he was angry, but he's a very... He's calmed down. He's like a cuddly koala now. But definitely in the 70s, he would walk in with his singlet, you know, like Charles Bronson or something like that. Right! Because, you know, I tell the story of how when we'd have parent-teacher interviews, like I go to my teenage sons now, you got to sit with them, with the teachers, and the teacher goes, oh, you know, he's doing really well, and he's such a good boy. In our day, we didn't go to the... Did we? We didn't go to the... No. And so we would sit at home, and then you hear the car come around the corner, and Dad would come through the back door, right, where's David? Where's Mark? And we'd all be hiding under our duvets. Because he'd be taking his belt off as he'd walk in the back door. Oh, my God. Whack. Yeah. He goes, I didn't hit you that much. But we were hit occasionally. And where are we going to the city, aren't we? You live in the city.
Yes. Well, you could take me to Bendigo.
Bendigo. Here we go.
I like a drive.
Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. Also, thanks to CoinJar. Set up a CoinJar account to buy and sell Bitcoin. It's really, really easy. No, trust me, it is. Just go to nearly.com.au/thedebrief to get a bonus when you set up your account. And Homie, they're a Melbourne-based social enterprise creating pathways out of homelessness. Do you know at the moment there's about 100,000 Australians live without a permanent address? And of those, 20,000 people sleep on the streets or in a makeshift shelter. Why not change this? Come on. Go to www.homie.com.au. Okay, back to the program. We're back on The Debrief. Dave O'Neill here, driving Fiona O'Loughlin home.
You're getting me with Kev's stories.
I can't get enough of Kev. I think Kev, because we were just out there doing a gig near where he lives and where Mum and Dad live. And now, because his son's a comedian, he sort of thinks now it's given him license to be a comedian. Because like the women of the post office that he goes into all the time, he's like, your father is very funny. He walks in the door and makes us all laugh. It's like... And they normally like, you know...
What does he think of...
Rude jokes or... I think they're all original. So he says stuff like, you know, he'll be in the post office queue and a young woman will walk in and he will go, hello, love, how much? Like, it's like, Dad, you can't ask a young woman, like, you know, proposition her like a prostitute. That's not on. Yeah, anyway, Kev.
We were talking before about how many... headliners these days are middle-aged.
We're all middle-aged.
And you were talking about the young comics.
Yeah. Like,
Dave Williams is 40 now.
I know. And so, like, say Dave Thornton would be... They're the young ones, and they're all in their 30s, like late 30s. But there are some. Like, how old would Luke McGregor be? He'd be 28 or 29. He'd be maybe 30 now.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
I saw him the other night.
It doesn't matter. You can bellyache and moan about... whatever in comedy, but good stuff always rises.
Yeah, good jokes, good stories, a good character.
He's just so good.
He's a very funny man, Luke McGregor. How long did it take you to find your style, you reckon?
Once I decided to storytell, because I remember thinking, okay, check out, you're not telling jokes anymore, you're going to tell those stories that, you know, because I was this... kind of the keeper of stories in our family. It was always...
It's an oral tradition.
Yeah. And they'd always, you know, and it was always like, Fiona, tell them the story about, you know, there's always someone who tells the stories.
Yeah.
So I kind of did that, but it takes so long, so many years.
Yeah.
When you think you can't find another gear, you still find another gear.
That's true.
You know, because... even though, you know, I thought I'd found my feet, I didn't actually move on stage until 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I noticed tonight you were acting out stuff and moving around.
Yeah, and that's, you know, my hope was always to transport my dinner party self to the stage.
Yeah.
And I always used to, when I was
You would have been a great
stories,
dinner party guest in the 80s and the 90s. A couple of wines.
That was my stage.
Yeah, you'd be off, yeah.
And I used to get up.
Fiona, she's like, oh, great.
And I used to get up and walk around. Like,
oh, really?
If I was telling a story, I'd have...
You'd act it out.
My sister and I used to go, oh, God, you always used to get up and...
That's hilarious.
You know, I'd have to... And so, but it actually took years to be that comfortable on stage.
Did people then prompt your stories? Like your husband would go, tell the, that's what my wife does. She goes, tell them that story. I'm like, oh, no, you tell it.
That chemist shop uniform story.
Oh, that's the one that my mother-in-law loved.
Yeah, and see, that was one of the stories I didn't even think to tell for a long time.
Did someone point it out to
my
you?
My sister Kate did.
Oh,
we were
that's
at
the best
her place
when they, yeah.
having... It was years ago, and we were drinking champagne and talking about embarrassing moments. And this, I remember, I was thinking, oh my God, I think I've got one. And it came back to life. Like,
yeah,
I've actually
yeah.
buried it. It was so embarrassing.
Yeah. For people that don't know, Fiona basically wore a chemist uniform. You were working at St. Vincent's folding clothes, and you got invited to the chemist's house, the guy that owns the chemist shop.
Which
is a big deal.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
And you
And I wore their chemist shop uniform to their house for dinner. Yes, I did.
Because you got it from the op shop.
Yeah. But even...
I love that line where you say, when you walked in, they would have just looked at each other and gone, is she taking the piss? What's going on here? Why is she wearing a uniform?
Wasn't it funny how you find old... Because I've just done this show where you... pull out old stories and kind of repolish them.
Oh, nothing wrong with that.
With 5 years extra, you know, experience under your
make
belt,
it better.
You find these nuggets that you just repolish.
Yeah, it's good.
Like I love saying in that show, because it's the truth, I love saying when I die, I want God to roll the tape. Roll the tape.
That's a good saying.
At the Foresters dinner party back in 1986, you know.
What was happening there? How long were you in Alice Springs for?
27 years.
Oh, wow. Hey, remember, you know what? I've been on Family Feud with you not once, but twice.
Really?
You've met Kev. Yeah, I just remember this. So when Bert Newton hosted Family Feud,
they
had a comedy edition, and the O'Neills went up against the O'Loughlins.
That's right.
And there was me, my dad Kev, and my brother Mark and his wife Heather, and there was you.
I remember Mark and Heather.
Yeah, and there was you. There was... Chris, your husband,
Biddy,
and Emily. That's right. And you guys won mainly because my and I remember saying Kev and Biddy would in Hollywood they'd be married. They'd be.
I've forgotten all about that.
Yeah, Bert. And then the question that we got: What do you do when you go out on the date? And I said, brush your teeth. And Bert goes, pick of the board, brush your teeth. Then he goes to my brother Mark, what do you do when you get ready for a date? And he goes, brush your teeth. I'm like, what are you doing? I just said that. And so we lost. And then, I think it was last year or the year before, I went up against you again, Emily.
And Emily again.
And you beat me again.
I do like winning.
With Grant Denyer.
I used to get really obsessed with winning. And like any show that I went on.
Really? Oh, yeah, like even Spix or those shows.
Yeah, I wanted to win.
Right.
And I remember Good News Week. And... I got
did
so...
Did we... Oh, yeah, you had sides on that, didn't you?
I got so competitive on Good News Week.
Well, that's a good show to be competitive on, because it was quite competitive.
The producer, Pam Barnes...
Pam Barnes.
Pam was the producer.
Family Feud.
Anyway, Pammy, the producer on...
Who used
Good
to
News
hug
Week.
A lot. Hug
yes.
You. Yeah.
And she was kind of very motherly and...
Yeah, she was nice, yeah.
She left all the notes in one of the dressing rooms.
Oh, what was the games?
Yeah, and the answers.
Oh, fantastic.
And, of course, I swatted up.
Yeah, good.
I cheated.
Mikey used to get the notes.
I wasn't clever about it, though. I just kept answering it. And Paul McDermott's looking at me like, what are you doing? God, she's on fire tonight. And I couldn't help myself. I whispered to someone that I'd stolen all the notes. All the notes. Then he made me own up. But I do love winning. That's so weird. We did Family Feud twice.
Twice with two different hosts.
Because that year that Chris was on it, the kids were so embarrassed because...
Biddy would have been 18, maybe.
Yeah, but the kids at home watching on the telly when it finally went on air, because he had this chambray shirt on.
That's right.
Remember the chambray shirts?
Yes, and he had the kind of the white, grey, greyish blonde hair.
Yeah, he had the blue chambray shirt on and the sweat pouch under the arm. Appalling. Like just a a mop of and that kid's.
At least you guys won. Someone sent my brother a toothbrush anonymously in the mail. Like a threat, like a horse's head. Toothbrush for Mark.
Did you ever do Celebrity Deal or No Deal?
No! Did you do that?
Yeah, I played for a home viewer.
Oh, how'd that go?
Oh, I just picked. It was so depressing because I loved that. I used to watch it every day.
Yeah, you love Deal or No Deal.
Deal,
yeah.
Take the deal!
I never understood the game.
You know, it's not much to understand. That's why.
That's smart, why you liked it.
That's why smart people don't understand it, because it's so obvious.
And so what happened on Celebrity Deal or No Deal?
Oh, I won something so sad, like...
A water filter?
$150 for my home viewer.
$150. What, I went on The Brainiest Comedian, or... You know, they did a series of them on Channel 10, and you had to work out... They had the brainiest newsreader, the brainiest cricketer... And I came fifth on The Brainiest Comedian. Peter Hellier won. Yeah, because I'd never seen... You know, this is a tip. Watch the show before you go on it, because I'd never seen it.
Right.
And I thought they were just going to go straight to my area of specialty, which was 80s music. But they had to get your... They had to do all these anagrams. You had to had word games and make names of fruits out of these letters. I'm like, what is this? Where are the trivia questions? Yeah, but that's what they do on this show. I hadn't seen it before, so... That's why I maintain I came fifth. I got beaten by Hughesy. Cal Wilson came second, by memory. Yeah, anyway.
You know, you get some... I remember going into... It was when I was being managed by someone else, and I've gone in to see what's happening for me, you know, what's coming up.
Oh, yeah, what's coming up, right, yeah. Yep.
Okay, we've got some good news, says my manager. He goes, now, I've got an audition for you.
Oh, awesome.
You're going to audition to play the grandmother in... The musical, what was that? Adam's Family musical.
Okay. The Adam's Family.
So I've got an audition. I've got an audition to play the grandmother for the Adam's Family.
The grandmother?
Yeah. And also that celebrity thing for fat people.
Oh, yeah. Weight. No, oh, what yeah. Yeah. Excess baggage.
Yeah,
or
excess
Celebrity
baggage.
Fat Camp, yeah.
Either, either. So I walk out of there, I'm like, oh, that was a good
meeting. That's a winner. My manager rang up once and said, we've had an offer for you. Oh, we're good. They want you to dress up as a giant credit card in between the footy game on Friday night and try and break the world record for doing the Mambo number 5. Like, and you know what? I said to her, I almost want to say yes just to go and do it to see how bad it would be.
I'm...
a little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of...
To break the record.
To break the world record.
Not just humiliate yourself. To break
on,
the record while you're
everyone,
doing
Everyone, Mambo number 5. Oh, what are you doing? God. Having bottles and cans thrown at me at the footy.
Oh, my God.
That's funny, isn't it? The bad offers. But you, were you going to go on, I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here?
Yeah, but I decided to have a nervous breakdown instead.
In the interview, probably. Yeah, I reckon that show, you'd have to be really well prepared to get in that jungle.
One way to get thigh gap, I guess. But
well, lose weight. Yeah. But you know, I mean, I used to work with Chrissy Swan, and she
told
me. I
lost weight in a coma anyway.
Oh, you lost weight in a coma? Yeah. You looked when you went on Family Feud, which was fresh out of the coma. How many months out of the coma when you appeared on Family Feud? What months did you come out of the coma?
July.
Yeah, so you were on Family Feud in November.
Yeah.
So that's less than 6 months out.
I've always said I wanted to be so thin people worried about me.
You look like a Stepford wife. You look fantastic. The coma.
I just couldn't form sentences.
Yeah. Oh, Emily spoke a lot. Don't worry. Your sister was speaking up. Yeah, the offers you get. Yeah, interesting. Oh, we're almost at your house.
We are.
And you're living in the city now. How's that going?
I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, I don't cook.
So, yeah, no, you're
it's
like...
It's just me now. Just a crazy...
Did you cook a lot with four kids?
I love cooking.
Yeah.
Five.
Jesus.
But no, I'm living in the guts of the city. Why would you cook? There's no one to cook for.
But your daughter lives upstairs, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Does she cook for you?
Two floors up. We share every now and then. She's away at the moment, so...
Yeah, cool.
Oh, city living. I feel like...
So you live in the middle of the... But what's... Is it noisy?
I love noise.
Oh, you love the noise.
I grew up on a farm.
Yeah, I've been to your... I've done gigs near your sort of area, and it is very remote and very quite barren, isn't it?
I used to I hated it. I couldn't stand the isolation. Even as a kid, I thought it was fucked.
Yeah.
How quiet it was. To be able to hear your own pulse in your ears.
Yeah.
But how that's far, how quiet it was.
How far was the closest neighbour from you? Like.
Oh, well, we lived in a tiny town.
Oh, you lived in the town of that... What's it called again?
Guess who grew up in Waruka, the same town as me.
Oh, no, you've told me. This is
Cocaine Cassidy.
It's a criminal, that's right. Did you know her?
No, she's years younger than me.
But your dad would know her dad.
My dad knows her dad.
Oh, God. So there's you and Cocaine Cassidy?
Yeah.
What town is it again?
Waruka.
Waruka.
300 people, or 299. 298 now. So because I've gone, and I don't think Cocaine Cassie's coming back.
She's been taken off the fame roll there.
That story just got more and more.
Oh, she was an escort.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, it's terrible,
still,
isn't it?
Still, Waruka will take it.
Yeah. Claim the fame.
Better than nothing.
But you lived back with your parents for a while, didn't you? After
the coma, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been hard.
Well, it was, because I didn't know then, Dave, that this would happen, that I'd have this back.
Yeah.
Like,
did you think, oh, this is it?
Oh, absolutely, I thought this is it.
Oh, God.
I'm 50.
I feel like me going back to my parents.
52 years old, not a penny in the bank.
Yeah.
And I'm with my parents.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
So would you sit and have dinner with them at night, and you're like, wow, this is like...
And my head was exploding.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and all Mum would talk about is the fucking pergola. And I'm like, my life's over.
Yes.
My career's gone. Don't talk. I will never have a pergola.
No.
Can't we talk about something real? I nearly died. Like, no, let's talk about the pergola.
The pergola. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to drive up the tram track here.
There we
this
go.
This is some defensive driving.
Jesus Christ. I wish the listeners could see what I can see.
A tram.
And that's a tram.
That's a tram.
Coming straight for me. What? And I could actually jump out of the car and let you die like a man.
Yeah.
Actually, I might get it. I'll get it.
No, don't worry.
There, Dave.
Yeah, I know where you are, but I would die alone. Don't let me die alone. See you getting out in the tram, crunching me. You survive a coma, killed by a tram with Dave O'Neill.
If we do die in a minute, who do you reckon will get first dibs in the paper?
Oh, no, you. You. You'll get the front page. I'll be mentioned, but you'll get the photo. Cool.
I hope it's not a slow news day tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, no, we're off the tram track. We're right.
Yes, that was close.
Oh, boy. You see, you've got a nightclub opposite you.
I know. I love it.
Watch the young people.
I sit up there like a crazy old woman, and I watch this at night, and I just see, it's like watching my drinking history, but all in one night.
Yeah,
right.
It starts
really exciting.
And then it gets bad.
They're all happy. At midnight, it gets a little bit dangerous. 2 a.m. Oh, fuck you, Gary!
Don't you love it?
I love it. Look at them all. Who lines up for a nightclub?
Oh, my God. They seem to be mainly young Asian people. Got yourself out of the most popular young Asian nightclub in town, Fiona.
I wonder what they listen
to. What sort of music they... Yeah, I don't know. Probably just want, you know, a bit of Katy Perry.
I think they just go in there and do maths. Play the violin.
Oh, I can hear the violin. I'm going to back up here. I'm doing quite a radical move again. Well, thanks for coming on my podcast, Fiona.
Thank you.
People can find Fiona on Twitter, etc.
And Dave O'Neill, you will be in the front page tomorrow.
When I drive home.
We died.
We'll have fun in that nightclub.
I will. Thanks.
Be awesome.
See you, darling.
Cheers.
Bye. Thanks for the lift.